Harihi Om. Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahaviryan Karavavahai, Tejasvi Navadhi Tamastoma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Om Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So now we continue. Bhishma telling the story about Shikhandi, and now about his battle with Parasaram. So the first day has ended, and the second day started, and then after Bhishma rendered Rama unconscious, when he came back to consciousness, then he shouted at Bhishma, "Stay, you are already killed." Even before remounting his chariot, he shot an arrow that seemed like the rod of death. It hit my right side and set me spinning. As I reeled, Rama killed my horses. He simultaneously covered me with 1,000 more arrows. Without being confounded, I countered his attack with lightness of hand. As I struck down his arrows, my charioteer quickly fetched fresh horses for my chariot. A terrible exchange went on between us. Our celestial arrows met in mid-air and stayed there without falling. The sky became covered with a network of arrows that screened the sun. Rama shot thousands, then tens of thousands, then millions of arrows at me, which I duly countered with divine weapons. A great fire appeared in the sky, reducing the surrounding forest to ashes. As we fought on, in this way the sun set and the battle subsided. Right, so that's the end of the second day. We fought for many days, utilizing every celestial weapon and all forms of combat the Vedas describe. Rama released missiles that can hardly be described. They assumed diverse forms and came from every direction. I was continuously whirling in my chariot, repelling his weapons and trying to counterattack with my own. Both of us sought gaps in our opponent's defenses, and we both defended ourselves closely. The battle raged through the day, and at night we rested. We were both extremely exhausted from the fight. On the 23rd day of the battle, Rama fought with redoubled strength. All of a sudden, he fired a number of arrows that fell upon my horses and charioteer like venomous serpents. They were all slain, and I was left standing in an immovable chariot as Rama shot arrows charged with death at me. As I fought off his staffs, Rama fired a powerful missile that came at me like a streak of lightning. It caught me on the chest and threw me backwards off the chariot. I fell on the ground a full 50 paces away. Right, so 50 paces generally means, I mean, they were quite big, but I mean, for us, it would mean 75 feet away. You know, so that would be, yeah, means that means three, yeah, like 22 meters away. You know, out of the chariot, it hit them like that. You know, they were a bit bigger, so it'll be, but it would be an equivalent distance for them. Thinking me dead, Rama roared like a thundercloud, and all his followers cheered. The Kurus who had accompanied me were overwhelmed with sorrow. As I lay there stupefied, I saw 8 brilliant Brahmins with celestial forms surrounding me. They raised me off the ground and gently supported me. Sprinkling my face with cool water, they said, "Do not be afraid. You will soon be successful." Revived and comforted, I stood up and saw my chariot yoked to fresh horses that my mother was tending. I touched the feet and worshipped the memory of my ancestors. Then I ascended the chariot and sent her away. I took the reins and continued fighting. Right, because she was going to drive, right? I managed to catch Rama with an arrow of great power that pierced him deeply. He dropped to his knees and his bow slipped from his grasp as he fell down senseless. I then saw many inauspicious omens. The sky rained blood and meteors fell. The sun was eclipsed, high winds blew, and the earth trembled. But Rama was only stunned. In a short time, he got back to his feet and continued the fight. Both of us threw our fiercest weapons at each other until the sun set again, when we once more retired for the night. That night, as I lay on my bed, my mangled body being tended by physicians, I thought that the battle would never end. I prayed to the gods that they would show me some way to overcome Rama. Then, while I was sleeping, I again saw the 8 Brahmanas who had visited me on the battlefield. Comforting me again, they said, "Fear not, O son of Ganga. You are our own body, and we will give you all protection. You will surely vanquish Rama. Here is a weapon that was known to you in your previous birth. Manufactured by Vishvakarma, it is called the Pashwapa, and no one on earth knows it, not even Rama." Right, so there's no one here, no one knows it, so they don't know how to counter it. See, the celestial weapons or these other weapons like that, you have a thing, there's a way to counter them. You know, it's like if you send a wind weapon, you use a mountain weapon, or if you use fire weapon and water weapon, you know, these different ways to counter. But he said this one, they don't know. Rama doesn't even know. "You will then be able to revive him with the Sambodhana weapon." The luminous Brahmins vanished, and I awoke with joy. The sun rose, and the battle began again. Encouraged by the celestial Brahmins, I was enlivened and fought with renewed energy. After a furious exchange of weapons, I thought of the Pashwapa. The mantras suddenly appeared in my mind, but as they did, I heard a tumultuous uproar of heavenly voices. "O Bhishma, do not release the Pashwapa weapon missile." Disregarding them, I placed the weapon on my bow and aimed it at Rama. Suddenly, Narada Rishi appeared before me. The gods are stationed in the sky, and they forbid you to use this weapon. Rama is an ascetic, a Brahmin, and your preceptor. O son of Kuru, do not humiliate him by any means." Right, because he would be defeated, right? Because technically he would be killed, but he said by this Sambodhana weapon, he could revive him. Or he would be to the point where he can't fight. It means the others, he would get, be wounded and may faint or swoon, but then he'll come back and get back and be, you know, renewed in the fight. But in this, the battle will be over. As Narada spoke, I again saw the 8 Brahmins in the heavens. They smiled and said, "O best of the Bharatas, obey Narada. This will benefit all creatures." Parasaram, seeing the irresistible Pashwapa upon my bow, and not realizing that I had been forbidden to release it, shouted, "Alas, O Bhishma, I am vanquished." And he dropped his bow. His father, Jamadagni, along with other heavenly rishis, then came to him and ordered him to stop fighting. They told him I was one of the 8 Vasus, and that he could not slay me in battle. Jamadagni said, "Arjuna, the powerful son of Indra, will later cause Bhishma's death. Brahma has ordained this." Right? So he's pointing out he's one of the 8 Vasus, like that. And so then he's also a demigod, and he's only to be killed by Arjuna. And that is, killed means he'll stop fighting and he'll give up the fight and give up, you know, just meditate. It's because he has a boon that he can only die when he wants to. So he'll wait, you know, battle's over, he'll wait until he goes into Uttarayana, because the battle is happening now in Dakshinayana. So go into Uttarayana, and then after seeing Krishna and the Pandavas and everything, then only he'll leave. So the battle ended. Severely wounded, I went before my preceptor and prostrated myself at his feet. After this, he said to Amba, "O princess, you have seen me exert myself to defeat Bhishma. Still, I have not been able to overpower him. Therefore, you may go where you please. There is nothing more I can do." The maiden replied mournfully, "Be it so, O Holy One. You have done your best on my behalf, and I am grateful. Still my heart burns with revenge. I will practice asceticism. In this way I will gain the power to personally bring about Bhishma's death." My preceptor was highly pleased with my prowess, and he blessed me that I would be without any equal in battle. After Amba had bowed before him, he left with all his followers. Amba then entered the forest. She went to the Jamuna and performed severe penance. I knew everything because when I returned to Hastinapur, I appointed men to watch over her constantly. They gave me regular reports. For 1 year, she stood on the riverbank without eating, emaciated, and rough-skinned, bronzed by the sun, her hair matted, she stood with hands upraised. After 1 year, she broke her fast by eating a single dry leaf. Then she remained waist-deep in the water for another year, standing on one foot, fired by indignation. For 12 years she went on in this way. This is some serious revenge issues, no? So you can see it's just people had, you know, means one is that Kshatriyas, but also you see it's in the Dwapara Yuga. So they just had such focus. So that's why then, you know, because everybody would follow everything, do everything nicely, but, you know, they were very, very focused and very, very intent on what they were doing. So they decided on this. She's a princess, you have to remember. So if they decide on something, they do it. So if they take a vow, they do it, you know, like that. For 12 years she went on in this way. Neither her relatives nor anyone else could convince her to desist. Right, so relatives must have heard this, that, they must have gone. Then she left the Jamuna and wandered at will, visiting the sacred hermitages of many rishis. All the while she continued her austerities, bathing 3 times daily, meditating silently, and fasting. Her appearance changed from gentle to fierce, and she began to glow with ascetic power. One day as she was bathing in the Ganges, my mother said, "Why do you perform such terrible penance, O maiden?" Ambal replied, "I desire to destroy Bhishma, who is so powerful that not even Parasaram could defeat him. Thus I am set upon achieving insuperable power by my austerities." My ocean-going mother became angry upon hearing her words. "O lady, you act crookedly. You will not be able to attain your object because you are so weak. O daughter of Kashi, if you hold to your determination, I will curse you to become a terrible river in which water flows in you only during the rainy season. May you be full of crocodiles and other fierce aquatics." After saying this and pretending to smile, my mother vanished, leaving Amba in her waters. Still, the princess did not desist. She performed even more severe austerities, abstained from all food and water and controlling even her breathing. She wandered on, and when she arrived at Vatsabhumi, she fell down and began to run as a river. It is recorded that the river in Vatsabhumi runs only during the rainy season, and it is unapproachable due to its many crocodiles and dangerous fish. So you have like that. So then you hear about different places here and there, they have rivers, but it's only when it rains that they're there. So there'll be a dry riverbed, and then when the rainy season starts, the rain will build up, and then it'll just come rushing down like that. And for that, when the rain stops, it'll disappear again. So they're you know, in other words, they're not considered, you know, the best of rivers, these ones. By merit of her austerities, however, only half of her body became a river, while the other half continued as before. She went on with her asceticism, and after some time the rishis at Vatsabhumi approached her. They asked her what she desired, and when she explained, they said, "You should seek Mahadev's favor, for that deity can fulfill any desire." Amba supplicated Shiva, and he soon appeared before her, asking to know her desire. When she asked the god for the power to kill me, he replied, "You will slay him." Amba then asked how it would be possible, since she was a woman. Shiva replied, "My words can never be false. O Blessed One, you will become a man and kill Bhishma in battle. You will remember all this in your next life. Born in Drupad's line, you will become a Maharatra, quick in the use of weapons and highly skilled and fierce in battle. This will soon come to pass." When Shiva vanished, Amba gathered wood and built herself a funeral pile in the sight of all the rishis. Setting fire to it, her mind burning with wrath, she hurled herself into the fire, crying, "For the destruction of Bhishma." So Shikhandi was Amba in his last life. He was born first as a woman and then attained his present form. Listen as I tell you how this occurred. Drupad's queen was childless for a long time. Together, she and her husband worshipped Shiva for a child. He prayed for a powerful son, but Shiva told him that his wife would give birth to a daughter who would later be transformed into a man. Although Drupad beseeched the god for only a son, Shiva replied, "It shall be as I have said, for it has been decreed by destiny." Right? Because it's already been, Shiva's already said this is how it's going to go. And so then Drupad said, "No, I just want a son. I don't need a daughter that turns into a son. I want a daughter. You know, I want a son." Soon after, Drupad's queen conceived. In due course, she gave birth to a daughter. Remembering Shiva's words, Drupad announced that a son had been born. He had all the rituals performed for a boy. No one saw the baby. Only a few trusted palace staff knew the truth. Drupad raised his child with love, teaching her riding and all these arts. He also had her instructed in bowmanship and other martial skills. When she became a youth, the queen asked Drupad to find her a suitable wife. Drupad was anxious. The child had not been transformed into a son. Were Shiva's words false? But his wife was fixed. Mahadev's promise cannot fail. Shikhandi will become a male and therefore should marry a woman. Right, because otherwise, if not, then she should marry a prince, right? Drupad was convinced by the queen's faith and arranged for a marriage. He chose the daughter of Hiranyavarma, king of the Dasharnakas. That king was unconquerable, and he was happy to give his daughter to Drupad's son. No one suspected anything when the wedding ceremony was performed. The youthful Shikhandi, beautiful like a god, appeared dressed as a boy in fine armor. She remembered the events of her previous life and Shiva's words, so even though she had been born a woman, she conducted herself as if she were a man. Right, so she knew, it means in other words, she's still Amba. I mean, now she's born like this, but she has that same consciousness and all that. So now she gets a chance to, she has that determination and focus. Now she's been taught the martial arts and everything like that. And she's expecting that, as Shiva said, she will become a boy. And Drupad and his wife are also thinking the same. But it was only a matter of time before Hiranyavarma's daughter discovered the truth. She sent messengers to her father to inform him that Drupad's son was actually a woman. Her father was furious. He sent an emissary to Drupad saying, "I am insulted by your wickedness. How could you have accepted my daughter in marriage for your own daughter? I am preparing now to come and punish you for this act. Soon I will slay you and all your ministers." It seems to be a theme. You get rid of the guy and his ministers, because the ministers then could, you know, re-attack back or anything like that. Or the man's strength is it's him and his ministers, so they're kind of a group for a king. You know, the king, his prime minister, his other ministers. You know, these are all things that as a king, then they're important. So there's seven different aspects. There's going to be himself, right? Then his prime minister. I think then there's going to be the other ministers. Then there's going to be his his fort, right? Then there's going to be, or his army, then his fort, his treasury, and I can't remember what the last, and his allies, these seven. So as it is in that order, then as they go back, so if he loses his allies, but he has everything else, he can still fight. He loses his allies and the fort, he can still fight, because he has his everything else and his money he can do. If he loses money, he still has everything, you know. So it goes back, and if it's just him and his prime minister, they can figure something out. Or if it's just him, he can still get another prime minister. So when you get rid of all the ministers, then it just means it's just him. But now you've killed him, so then that kingdom is gone. So basically it means we're going to destroy you and your kingdom. Okay, so then we shall see. Next class, what happens with, you know, Shikhandi, who's still a girl but supposed to be a boy. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.